on. Also, Junaid Ahmad analyzes the decision by the U.S. to stay in Afghanistan. At 11th Stage and Studio presents the Breast Cancer Monologues, a documentary for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Andre Middleton speaks with Yvonne Kennedy, an artist from Mexico, who recently showed her paintings at the Alexander Gallery at Clackamas Community College. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia with host Chris Andre following this.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present Jacko as part of the We Real Cool KBOO at the Clinton Jazz Film Series on Thursday, October 22nd at 7 p.m. Jacko tells the story of Jaco Pastorius, a self-taught, larger-than-life musician who changed the course of modern music. Never-before-seen archival footage unveils the story of Jaco's life, his music, his demise, and the lasting victory of artistic genius. Again, that's Jacko, Thursday, October 22nd, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information about films and screening times can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Nosh for Nonviolence fundraiser on Thursday, October 22nd from 5 p.m. until midnight at participating Portland area restaurants. Nosh for Nonviolence is a collaborative fundraiser for two local domestic violence intervention agencies, the Portland Women's Crisis Line and West Women and Children's Shelter. Again, that's Nosh for Nonviolence fundraiser on Thursday, October 22nd from 5 p.m. until midnight. You can find the list of participating Portland area restaurants at kboo.fm. on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, October 20th, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Our guest today, Robert Lundahl, is back. He's going to be talking about the politics of how the environmental movement got greenwashed by huge corporate interests when the Sierra Club and other enormous NGOs sold out to companies that decided it would be perfectly okay to go ahead and illegally fail to consult with tribal people. Giant solar and wind plants across the West are going to go down into flames because they neglected to take into account the fact that what they wanted to build and where they wanted to build it came into conflict. And usually these companies figure they can just buy their way out. And in this case, they thought part of the buyout would be the co-opting of the environmental movement, largely represented by huge NGOs, who thought that this would go unnoticed. Or in fact, if it was noticed, that people would be okay with it because it was solar, right? And solar is good. Well, yeah, solar is good as long as it's not on sacred land, as long as it's not on land that, again, is taken illegally from indigenous people without any recourse. They did not uphold processes involving consultation when construction projects impact historic grounds, where there was a village, where there were burials, where there is an area that historically or even today, used by Native peoples in spiritual and traditional practices, that those people weren't even there. They looked at the land and the Mojave Desert, and they said, "Ah, it's empty. Well, let's do a solar thing. There's lots of sunlight, and there's no people." You know why? Because they thought, they don't think of Native people, they don't think of Indigenous people as being human beings. Nope. And of course, it's far more important to come up with solar energy to sell to everybody else. There's plenty of other places where solar energy could be installed. And in fact, the Mojave Desert is a perfect place. But first consult with the people who live there, whose land it is. And that's not... There's a great deal more to say here, and I am going to stand back and let Robert Lundahl say it for us, because he is the one who has been there, and he is the one who has documented all of these events right from the get-go. We've got just a couple of headlines to get through. Yeah, we wonder why Oregon students, for a while, I think they've risen to up to third from the bottom, but they used to be dead last as far as graduation. Here's why. A Medford man was arrested after he accidentally shot himself while trying to show his revolver to a convenience store clerk. You can only imagine the horror of the face of the convenience store clerk. Also, the possibility that he might have returned fire. This comes from the Medford Mail Tribune. A young guy was charged with carrying a concealed handgun without a permit, 2 counts of endangerment. Police said that the man was carrying a loaded gun in the same pocket as his wallet. He went to a 7-Eleven, pulled out the gun in order to get to his wallet, and the clerk said it was a nice gun, so the man tried to show it to him and shot himself in the hand. And we wonder why, what's the problem with the Oregon's young. The issue of breaching 4 giant dams on the Snake River to help endangered salmon is now back on the front burner. We're going to be talking tomorrow, I believe, with Helen Goodteacher. Critics say the dams kill vast numbers of salmon, and the evidence is in. It's been in forever. We know this is true. The 9-year reign of Prime Minister Stephen Harper has finally come to an end. And we have back in the limelight Justin Trudeau. Yes, indeed, it's the same. That's the son of our original Prime Minister Pierre Elliott Trudeau. However, because Stephen Harper's out of the picture, which is very, very good, it doesn't mean that we're out of the woods yet, as it so to speak, because it turns out that, wait for it, that Justin Trudeau is pro Keystone XL, which means that that's tacit approval of the catastrophe that is northern Alberta, thanks to tar sands mining up there. Now, after months of public input, Environment Oregon, Oregon Wild, the whole works, after highlighting the overwhelming and broad public support for increased protection of Crater Lake, individuals and volunteers are delivering today signatures to Ron Wyden's office. And we may very well see when the dust settles that Crater Lake will at last have the protection that it richly deserves. Now, with campaign mailers and public statements flying, it's likely the Port of Vancouver voters know where Eric LeBrun and Lisa Ross, they of course are candidates for District 2, and that of course is the Port Commission, and this of course is the Port of Longview, and the question of whether we site a terminal there. The issue of transparency is what is being talked about. Little or none of it, unfortunately. Millennium Bulk Terminals is cashing in on the lack of transparency there in that election. So again, we'll see what happens with that. And on that note, we're going to go now to our guest today, Robert Lundahl, on the line. Thank you so much. Thanks for your patience. All of the previous headlines, of course, are part of the story that you're telling. Robert Lundahl has been on the program before. He's a filmmaker. The film in question that we're talking about today is Who Are My People? This is the massive greenwashing that's gone on in the Mojave Desert and the co-opting of the environmental movement by solar and wind power companies hoping to cash in on indigenous lands and traditional lands. I just want to note that Robert Lundahl has two other films of great importance. One is A Song on the Water, beautiful, beautiful film about the Salish Indians up in British Columbia, and of course, Unconquering the Last Frontier, which is about the Elwha River. And again, commend your attention to those films, which we're trying to bring to Portland. But right now, today, we're talking about Who Are My People, the Mojave Desert, and respect for land that does not, that belongs to other people. It is not just up for grabs. This is truly a David and Goliath story. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Chris.
Well, I've gone through some of the material. What you've done is really extraordinary. You've gone up against some of the most powerful energy interests in the nation, and not only
in the world,
yes, indeed, and also some of the most powerful environmental NGOs in the world who have sought to override the interests of people who have a right to be here. These are traditional lands. These are burial sites. These, in many cases, sacred sites. And even if they weren't, if the land belongs to other people. Talk a little bit about what the response has been to some of the film from some quarters.
Well, it was really interesting. I had published a lot of writings because I couldn't quite believe my ears and eyes as I set about to make what I thought was a simple film. I mean, here was this idea that we were going to build renewable energy in the desert, and they had to get EISs, environmental impact statements. And I thought, hey, that's really interesting. I'd like to film some of that because it's a multidisciplinary inquiry about resource use and culture and all of that. And I thought, how perfect for democracy. Well, the first thing that I noticed was that they had not consulted with tribes. And because I had made Unconquering the Last Frontier in Washington and Canada and so forth, I knew that tribes needed to be consulted with by the federal government, and that, it's the primary relationship government to government. And they weren't doing it, and they continued not doing it all the way through the process of making the film, which was 4 years. So writing my way through this and sharing my experiences with blogs and so forth was really instructive. And I had written an article called Is the DOI, Department of Interior, Committing Cultural Genocide and Ecocide? And I thought it was a fair question. And an honest question. And it coincided with Harry Reid's Green Energy Summit in Las Vegas, and I was screening the film there in 2013. So it was a little bit of a challenge to the DOI and to Harry Reid's office and so forth. Well, this was published on Clean Technica, and you can Google that and look at the responses from the moderator, who basically accused me of promoting a pack of lies and all of this. So I gotten some friends to make comments and so forth. A lot of desert folks, Shanghai Brown, who publishes the Sunrunner magazine, Taylor Jennings, a wonderful friend from Port Angeles, all these folks weighed in, and it was a melee online. Of course, we're all familiar with, trolls, but this guy was a moderator for Clean Technica, and Clean Technica bills itself as the number one clean energy blog in the world. So that gives you an idea that I was going up against assumptions and power, however unwittingly, just trying to tell this story.
And cultural genocide, really, this is, what were some of the energy companies actually trying to do? What had they assumed, what assumptions had they made about the land that they planned to be basically taking over from the rightful owners, the tribal people in that area?
Well, they made the assumption that it was a wasteland because it was a desert. Desert equals wasteland, right? That was assumption number one. Assumption number two, Solar Millennium, the largest solar firm in the world, wanted to build it near Blythe, and there was a beautiful geoglyph of Kokopili, half insect, half person, that you are familiar with from coffee cups and T-shirts. But on the ground in his form there, he's 200 feet long, and is a manifestation of the creator, Quetzalcoatl, who is the deity of the Uto-Aztecan peoples. And his orientation in the land and with regard to the mountains is significant in telling the story of the Yuto Aztecan creation story on the land. And it came back that the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, said that this particular geoglyph was 13 years old, not 1,000 years old or more. And we think that that misinformation originated with the company, Solar Millennium, that they basically sort of spread the rumor that they could destroy this and it would be okay. And the BLM, you know, bought in and was, repeating that, essentially. The Mojave is close to the Colorado River. It's a place where tribal peoples lived since time immemorial. It was like the Nile. And so the Chemehuevis and others lived in caves up in the sand hills above the Mojave, and their burials and village sites for hundreds of miles across the desert. But the BLM and the applicant companies chose to ignore that. Now, just to fill your listeners in, big projects there like Ivanpah, which is the one that's killing all the birds that you may be familiar with, and also Warren Buffett has a big one outside Barstow, they had to be supplemented by 40% fossil fuels because the solar technologies had not been tested and didn't work. So essentially they became fossil fuel plants.
Robert, we are completely out of time. I want to keep this going. I want to talk about this some more tomorrow. I want to let listeners know we're going to have Robert. If Robert can make it back on the show tomorrow or soon, we want to continue. Sure. This is really important. It's just an absolutely incredible situation. So I want to put up some of these articles on the KBOO website, Battling Goliath, Saving What's Left of the Future, The Importance of Simple Things. It's an extraordinary piece. You should read it. It backs up everything that you've heard Robert say today. This has been Robert. Thank you so very, very much for the film work, for the work that you did, the risks that you took, and the courage that you showed in the face of overwhelming obstacles. Thank you so much. This has been Air Cascadia for Tuesday, October 20th, 2015. Janet Anderson engineered the show for us today. Thanks for that, Janet. The